The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by IBM Watson, combining AI with Internet of Things data to help growers increase yields, improve quality, and drive sustainability. There are still 15, maybe 16 million acres of corn to plant. What was planted early or on time is in meh condition. And any corn acres still to be planted to corn are losing yield potential by the moment. But before the market worries about any of that, let's get this supply and demand report out of the way first.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with Abigail Spanberger from Virginia's 7th District. Then it's on to Tate Bennett from the Office of Public Engagement and Environmental Education. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from the Farm Journal Business Editor. I'm Handsome Newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
Hey, how are you this morning, Davis?
Super psyched. Super
good.
Psyched, brother. Yeah.
Yeah, big show. Big show. Mm-hmm. Lots to talk about on today's show. Congresswoman Spanberger is the chair of the Conservation and Forestry Subcommittee on the House Ag Committee.
Okay.
So we're going to be talking about how USDA is doing with implementing some of the conservation programs under the latest farm bill. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about that. But she's also out in support of the livestock transportation upgrades that
okay.
we have been talking about for quite some time. So we'll get the latest on that from the Congresswoman as well. And then I'm really looking forward to the conversation with Tate Bennett from EPA. We'll learn what they are doing to open up, you know, maybe pull the blinds up at EPA mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. bring the public in, engage with the public a little bit more. I'm looking forward to that conversation with her a whole lot. So
that'll be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've got a final rule that we want to talk about with Tate as well. And that is the, that lifts the requirements on farms to report the pollution that they emit through animal waste. I know
Excellent.
That sounds bad,
yeah.
but I want to find out from Tate why that's needed.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd say it's a good thing.
I've got a good idea why it's needed, but we'll let Tate explain it here coming up at the bottom of the hour. A little bit of rain around there right now.
A little cloudy here in Sparkle City.
Yeah.
Last I went out and ran to the printer to pick up my news copy, it was just cloudy.
Yeah.
But there's a big green blob over our area of the state, and it
yes.
doesn't look like it's going anywhere fast.
Yeah. Speaking of going nowhere fast, at least right now, corn, soybeans, they're all trading in that 4 to 5 cent lower range right
mm-hmm.
now. Waiting on the supply and demand report that is coming from USDA
yeah.
in about 50 minutes from right now.
Yep.
So
yep.
We better hurry up and get this show
yeah.
out of the way.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Well, we better get the show out of the way. Make room.
Yeah, USDA reported yesterday 83% of the national corn crop is planted. While solid progress was made on the week, plantings are still short of the five-year average pace of 99% planted by this week. 62% of that crop has emerged, and 59% of that is in good to excellent condition. The USDA also said 60% of the soybean crop is in the ground, which compares to an average pace of 88% planted. According to the report, 34% of the national soybean crop has emerged, compared to an average of 73% emerged for this week. 4% of the winter wheat harvest is complete, and 83% is headed, and 97% of the spring wheat crop has been planted with 85% emerged, and Chip, get this, 81% of that crop is in good to excellent condition on
yeah.
your spring wheat there.
Yeah, very good. I mean, it was late planted, but it is in good shape. On the corn plantings, like I said in the open, there's still 15, maybe 16 million acres of corn that
yeah.
was intended to be planted
mm-hmm.
that needs to be planted yet or is going to go prevent plant or switch to sorghum or switch to soybeans or switch to some other covered commodity. But it is amazing to me that the market hasn't made up its mind that it needs to do something to ration potential usage down the line. If right. it doesn't at some point, it's yeah. going to be an interesting summer yeah. market.
Well, and Chip, from the clear as mud file, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue released some details on the disaster aid and market facilitation payments ahead of a visit to Iowa later today. Perdue said unplanted acreage will not be eligible for market facilitation payments, but USDA continues to mull some sort of minimum payment on prevent plant acres that are seeded to a harvestable cover crop. Prevent plant assistance will be limited to areas under disaster declarations, although a statement says exceptions will be available on a case-by-case basis, whether farmers have crop insurance or not. I don't know if that helps us at all.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that that story is from a release that came out from USDA yesterday.
Yes.
To me, it was a release saying what they've already said.
Right.
And adding more confusion.
It's kind of like, well, we got to say something. Here, we'll say this.
And the reason that they did that is because, you know, Perdue and Trump coming to Iowa today, they're trying to head off a bunch of questions.
Sure, sure. Well, in other news, the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers Association has filed a motion to block the Trump administration's decision to make E15 available year-round, contending the measure exceeds the administration's authority. The association has asked the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia to review the EPA ruling on Monday. The association will have 1 month to make its case to the court. National Corn Growers President Lynn Crisp thanked President Trump on behalf of corn farmers for pushing year-round E15, saying, quote, "Farmers are facing some tough times, which makes this announcement particularly welcome." We'll have to wait and see how that develops. Chip.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Davis.
You bet.
Let's bring in Annalisa Laca. She is business editor for Farm Journal. Annalisa, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Chip?
Doing just fine, just fine. Hey, the dairy margin coverage program, sign-up starts real soon, doesn't it?
Yeah, so FSA offices will be able to sign producers up beginning June 17th, which is Monday. So, yep, right around the corner.
Yeah, now what is the dairy margin coverage program? I mean, it is different than the old margin protection program, right?
Yes, yeah, so the dairy margin coverage program is, should we say, like a replacement or an upgrade maybe of the dairy margin protection program. And so the rules are different. It's really a no-brainer to sign up. I mean, every market analyst I talk to, every economist that I talk to says, particularly for the smaller farms, up to the 5 million pounds mark of milk volume, it's totally a no-brainer because that first 5 million pounds is free. And right now, the payout for the first 4 months of the year is over $4 a hundredweight. So it's free money on the table. You just have to fill out the application.
Well, if it's a no-brainer, Annalisa, I mean, is there the potential that it's impacting production levels?
Yeah. So actually, a new study from Cornell by Chuck Nicholson shows that by 2023, the dairy margin coverage program has the potential to reduce milk prices by 50 cents a hundredweight compared to the old program. So farmers will be getting payments from this program, but the logic is that because farmers are going to be getting all these payments, they're going to increase production and keep cow numbers higher than they would in an otherwise, you know, not mm-hmm. subsidized market. So there is that potential with the program.
Yeah, that's interesting because they never want mm-hmm. these programs to influence overall production levels, but somehow, some way, they always seem to have some kind of an impact.
Yeah, and you can read that full study at milkbusiness.com.
Milkbusiness.com. All right, Annalisa, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chip. Bye.
That is Annalisa Laca, business editor for Farm Journal.
No,
yeah,
ahead.
Coming
He's
up next.
Here. He's not here.
We've got Congresswoman Abigail Spanberger from Virginia right here on AgriTalk. With recent advancements in technology and more usable data being created than ever before, the future is bright for agriculture. The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture collects hyperlocal Internet of Things data to create an electronic field record that is deliverable on a scalable, security-rich cloud platform. The solution applies AI and predictive analytics to this data to generate actionable, field-specific insights that food companies, grain processors, produce distributors, and farmers can use to help improve crop management. At IBM, we help agribusinesses accelerate their journey to cloud and transform into cognitive enterprises by combining Watson AI with accurate weather and farm data to help growers around the world make better decisions about preseason planning, plowing, planting, spraying, and harvesting. To learn more, visit ibm.biz/agriculture.
Built over generations, the dairy is what gets you up in the morning and sometimes keeps you up at night. To say you're invested is an understatement. Merck Animal Health Brands have a 50-year history of providing the products dairy herds need to stay healthy. With innovation, passion, and integrity, we'll do what's right for your operation and for you. This is why Merck Animal Health works. Visit MAHcattle.com to see how Merck Animal Health can work for you.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best soybean yield ever. But frog eye leaf spot, brown spot, aerial blight, and white mold can get in your way. New Dilaro fungicide will help you fight them. Dilaro delivers unmatched preventative and curative defense against yield-robbing diseases, so your varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Central Life Sciences reminds you to get control of flies on your swine operation with Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. Clarifly Larvicide prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from animal manure by as much as 96%, and Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that tackle your fly problem. Flies spread disease, impact your neighbors, and interfere with swine weight gain. Visit centralflycontrol.com. That's three words, centralflycontrol.com.
Attention, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. If you use dual-ended combat arms earplugs and suffer hearing loss or tinnitus, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer agreed to pay millions to settle allegations it sold defective earplugs to the military that were standard issue to soldiers deployed between 2003 and 2015. If you served during those years, were issued combat arms earplugs, and suffer from hearing loss or tinnitus, call now.
Call 800-820-1659. That's 800-820-1659.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop input.
New Dilaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Standing by.
Yeah. Hey, Davis, in the crop progress report, in the corn percent planted, some of the progress that was made this last week, or in the week ended June 9th, pretty remarkable, you know.
Illinois really was.
Yeah, Illinois went from 45% to 73%. Indiana went from one-third planted to two-thirds planted in a week.
Yeah.
Ohio went from one-third to half. Ohio, I think this last week, really, we hoped that we were going to see progress all across the Eastern Corn Belt.
Yep.
And there was progress, obviously, in Ohio, but the rains just hung on over there in Ohio.
Yes, a couple of quick things on that. Number one, we talked about, you know, you're going to need a window for that dirt to dry out just a little bit.
Right.
But number two, we've always talked about once, you know, farmers get a window and they got that planter hooked up, boy howdy, it's turning and burning time. And this last week's planting progress was certainly proof of that.
Exactly. Exactly. No doubt about it. All right. Let's have a conversation now with Abigail Spanberger. She is our representative from the 7th District of Virginia. Congresswoman Spanberger, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate
it. Great. Hey, tell us about the 7th District.
The 7th District of Virginia is a large swath of land, central Virginia. We have, population-wise, we're majority suburban, but land-wise, we are majority rural and agricultural. We have everything from cattle farms and bison farms and poultry farms and dairies to soybean farms across the southern portion of the district. We have large horticulture industry in the northern portion of the district. We really have a little bit of everything, with some small vineyards even in the northern portion of our district. I was elected back in November of 2018, sworn in January, and it's been such a pleasure representing the people of Central Virginia. And certainly joining the committee, the Agriculture Committee in the House of Representatives, has been a tremendous way for me to serve my my constituents.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's amazing to me how you remember learning things. And this is a bit of a detour. But Congresswoman, back when I was in eighth grade, I was at the sale barn in Maquoketa, Iowa, and a group of steers came through from Virginia. And that's the first time that I realized that agriculture really extended that far to the east. and here we are a few decades later, and I've learned a whole lot more about it as time goes on, that's for sure. So, okay, your role on the House Ag Committee is as chair of the Conservation and Forestry Subcommittee. You recently had a roundtable discussion on that. What did you learn?
Well, we had a great roundtable discussion. This was followed a hearing, our first hearing that we had last month. But the focus of our roundtable was really to discuss the federal efforts to protect and restore farmlands and wetlands through ASAP. We had the opportunity to hear from Acting NRCS Associate Chief Norton about the management of ASAP and discussions of how it is that we can potentially improve upon its flexibility. And we talked with a variety of different users of the program to determine what their experiences have been across the country.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that whenever we talk about conservation programs on AgriTalk, I always look for that voluntary angle first here, Congresswoman, because I don't want to see the mandates. I would much rather see farmers and USDA and our legislation, Farm Bill, get out in front of demands. Do you feel like we're there?
So that was actually a large portion of the conversation, both in our roundtable and also in our hearing last month. And what we've really focused on is listening to farmers first, listening to what it is that they're doing. Farmers, as I don't have to tell you, are the first conservationists that we've had. And they're driven to make sure that their soil is healthy and their water is clean, and that they're, you know, able to really focus on, making things better for their ability to provide for their families. You know, when you look back to the Dust Bowl era, when federal soil conservation initiatives first took hold, that was an effort by farmers to really ensure the resiliency of their livelihood. And, you know, when we look at these programs that are optional, that have the buy-in from farmers, you know, I'll point directly to Virginia, where I live. In the Chesapeake Bay watershed, voluntary conservation practices have led to reductions in soil erosion by 60%. And so that's tremendous success. That's a track record that we should really be proud of and we should be trumpeting. And when we look at what other programs we could be implementing, I think making sure that they are driven by farmers, that we are listening to the experiences of people working the land, that's first and foremost what it is that we should be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not just voluntary, they're actually very successful. So, I think that's the two points that are really important.
Yeah, what a great story to tell. It is such a good story to tell, and we just need to tell it more often, more clearly, and make sure that the environmental groups understand exactly what's going on. Chesapeake Bay, I'm glad that you mentioned it, because When I talk to farmers out here in Iowa, and water quality in Iowa, it is an issue because of what we have dealt with Des Moines Water Works in the state. So it's a high priority issue here in the state, and farmers continuously go back and cite that the Chesapeake Bay as number one, an issue that can be kind of forced upon you, and number two, the success of it all. So it's is that a kind of a prototype of what's to be expected?
So I don't know that it's a prototype. I think it's an example that works well here on the East Coast. Virginia, Maryland, Delaware have united forces to really prioritize the health of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. It's important. The health of our waterways is incredibly important, not just to kind of an environmental focus, but also to industries. When we look at, you know, how it's been incredibly important to our fishing, to our tourism, these are elements of the larger discussion that I think are incredibly important. We also have seen, you know, the value in cutting down that soil erosion that's been particularly important to farmers and their own land.
Yeah. I tell you, it is really impressive to see the efforts that farmers are making out there to improve the conservation efforts, whether it be through soil erosion or improving just the runoff situation. So it's all encouraging. Hey, go ahead.
I think an important part of the conversation, and you mentioned it slightly earlier, is when we're talking about our larger priorities and addressing environmental challenges and conservation challenges, I personally think that this is a place where a subcommittee like ours really has the ability to drive the conversation, make sure that people who maybe don't have an agricultural background, don't have a real eye on what's happening in agricultural communities across the country, understand that farmers and producers are making really great strides in the areas of conservation, and that those conservation efforts, be it carbon sequestration, be it efforts to combat soil erosion, are positively impacting some of the larger challenges that we have related to extreme weather events and climate change mitigation. And so I think my hope is that by adding to this conversation, particularly in a district like mine that is a real mix of demographics, agricultural and rural and suburban, that we can show the great work that is happening in communities like Central Virginia, but across the country on farms and ranches, be it in Iowa or be it here in Virginia.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Couple of minutes left here. Modernizing Agricultural Transportation Act. I understand that you're putting your support behind that.
That's correct.
That's great. Talk to us about the ELD regulations.
So this is an important thing for ranchers or cattlemen in our district, and we've got a number of poultry farms in our district. Basically, when I've talked to livestock producers, the real challenge is related to their ability to move animals. And recognizing that, I think one of the producers in my district said, a truck full of cows is not the same as a truck full of paper towels, you know, that you might be pushing from Pennsylvania to Virginia. And I think it's an important element of the conversation. And so while we're still trying to figure out what may be the right balance of safety and security, and what's balanced with what it is that our producers need, I think it's incredibly important that we recognize that for animal safety and for the security of their, essentially their business, we need to ensure that they can move animals and potentially not face catastrophic results by some of the limitations that may currently be in existence. And frankly, it's about bringing farmers to the conversation that we're having with Department of Transportation.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I hope we can do this again.
I would love to. Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure, and I hope to speak with you again sometime soon.
We'll make sure that we do that. That is Representative Abigail Spanberger. She is from the 7th District of Virginia. Okay, coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with Tate Bennett from EPA right here on AgriTalk.
Is your post-harvest grain protected from the ravaging effects of stored grain insects? For pennies per bushel, operators can fight insects in stored grains. Grain protectants from Central Life Sciences, such as Dicon IGR, Sentinel EC Insecticide, or Dicon IGR Plus, can help give you the long-term control of an insect growth regulator and the knockdown power of a broad-spectrum insecticide. Keep grain clean with grain protectants from Central Life Sciences. For more information, contact your local dealer or visit bugfreegrains.com.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams, creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, I don't know, but it looks to me like it's a hurry up and wait for the next 30 minutes.
It is, Chip. There's just not a lot of willing buyers here ahead of USDA's reports. So we're facing slight pressure in the corn and soybean markets. A little bit heavier in wheat, especially the HRW contracts.
Yeah, this corn market, I think it's when you get that July contract down there into that 410 range, the Dees contract back into the 430 range, I think there's a little bit of frustration building in the corn, isn't there?
Oh, I think so. Until we get those numbers from USDA, I think the market doesn't really want to move any higher at this point in time. We'll see what USDA does. But, you know, keep in mind that the estimates or the numbers coming up from USDA are from the World Board. They are not in charge of estimating the crop size, so I don't anticipate that there will be much adjustment down in terms of acreage and yield. That has to come from NAS, and that won't come until August, and then every month thereafter through the fall. So the process doesn't lead me to believe that there will be much of a change.
Gotcha. All right, some pressure on hogs today.
Yeah, unfortunately, struggling to find buyer interest in there. Everything to the upside is corrective at this point in time and seemingly met with willing sellers. And the reason for that is that the cash market continues to slide counter-seasonally. Until we get that cash market to firm up, I just don't see buyers coming into the hog market very aggressively.
Yeah, and the only reason that cash is going to firm is if the supply backs off or the demand outpaces it. And right now, that's going to be pretty difficult to see happen on either side of that. All right, Brian, good luck with the reports. We'll talk to you soon. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
The premier Farm Journal Hemp College is coming to Lexington, Kentucky on June 19th. This one-day farmer-focused event will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your questions. Register for Farm Journal Hemp College at regonline.com/hempcollege.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I enjoyed that conversation with Representative Spanberger. That was good.
Yeah, she was real good. We got to have her back.
She seems really on it out there and understanding some of those conservation issues out there. As they have discussed, according to Spanberger, mm-hmm. It is so important to keep these conservation issues voluntary. Because as soon as they start bringing out the mandatory stick, mm-hmm. that's when things can get kind of iffy. Now, one thing that we didn't talk about, don't forget, if you've got some conservation issues that you want to pursue on the property that you own, whether it be farmland, recreational ground, whatever it is, talk to your NRCS office, because there's probably some sort some sort of a program that you can at least get some cost share, whether it be 10%, 50%, whatever. There are programs available to you for some of the conservation. And you know, I say that, and you should work with somebody through Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Whitetails Forever, Turkey Federation, anybody like that, because they can kind of double down on some of the conservation efforts out there and double down on some of the cost shares.
Yep.
So don't feel like you need to work alone on some of the conservation efforts. Now, when it comes to cover crops and so on, there are cost share programs there as well. So just talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Learn about it. Learn about it. All right. Let's bring in Tate Bennett. Tate is the Associate Administrator for EPA's Office of Public Engagement and Environmental Education. She joins us for the first time on AgriTalk. Tate, how are you this morning?
Well, hey there, Chip. How are you?
We're doing real fine. So
I have a third title to add for you. Because, you know, two roles isn't enough. I'm the ag advisor here now at EPA.
Oh, you're the ag advisor there at EPA. That's pretty impressive because, you know, as we talk more and more about what's going on at EPA and the openness and the transparency that we're looking for at from EPA, your office is going to play a very big role in that, no question about it. But I want to start with something, Tate, that it's under the headline, EPA exempts farms from reporting pollution tied to animal waste. What do you think that, or what is that all about?
You bet.
There we go.
I won't bore you with the legal history here, because I don't want your listeners to, I don't want to lose them here. But when I actually joined the administration, in March of 2017, and within the first month, the DC circuit vacated a previous exemption that the Bush administration put in place, exempting animal ag from reporting emissions as hazardous ammonia and hydrogen sulfide under the statutes CERCLA and FCRA. Both are emergency response that are designed to be used for natural disasters,
right?
Responders, what have you. And so, and stop me if you have any questions here. So
they
vacated that, leaving not just the large guys who had been reporting previously under EPRA, they did not have an exemption previously, but the small guys under CERCLA, so, you know, folks back where I'm from, Shelbyville, Kentucky, would have had to report under CERCLA routine ag emissions regularly to the National Response Center for them to file it somewhere, you know, send in the business info and best guess reporting. There's no measurable real hard and fast measurement metrics yet. You know, I think some of the really brilliant scientific folks in our Office of Air and down in RCP are looking at that, but it's not there yet. So they would have had a report, and they wouldn't even have known A, how to, right? Calling the National Response Center is pretty daunting. I wouldn't do it for fun, right?
Yeah.
And they wouldn't know what to report. And so
we
put up some notifications the best we could. Congress actually moved to, in the omnibus bill, I believe, in 2017, was able to pass a law to avoid this problem going forward under CERCLA for the small guys. So that was good. We were happy that Administrator Wheeler, that was one of the first final rules pursuant to the law. He signed into law for the Federal Register upon joining the agency. is acting administrator. So that was pretty cool.
Right. When you say reporting regularly, I mean, this was a daily report that was going to have to be filed, wasn't it?
Routine to the National Response Center, who is on the hook for responding to real emergencies. I believe back in 2017, yeah. We were looking at a lot of emergency response ourselves to the hurricane season, right?
Yeah.
We were working with them on that. And so they would have had to take a time out and process these. So it didn't make sense. Unfortunately, when Congress did pass the Farm Act to exempt emission reporting under CERCLA, they didn't quite have the votes, I guess, to exempt farmers under another statute called EPGRA. And previously, the larger guys, so some of your CAFOs, were reporting under EPGRA. However, when the D.C. Circuit vacated the previous decision mm-hmm. under EPGRA, CERCLA, mm-hmm. it subjected them to not just the big guys, but the mid-sized farmers and ranchers to right. reporting under EPGRA. So we had to look at what we could do to provide some relief internally. We proposed a rule last October the administrator was in a couple months, and that's what we went final on a week ago. And
right.
we have tremendous support. You know, I would actually argue, and I'm an Aggie, but I would mm-hmm. argue that the benefits to agriculture are probably the secondhand effect. The real
yeah.
people who win on the EPGRA piece, because that's not, you wouldn't be filing with the National Response Center. Those reports
right.
would go to your first responders locally, right?
Exactly.
So then they would be obligated to,
yep.
to drive long distances in rural areas where producers live, up and down the road, taking up time,
yeah.
state resources, not responding to real emergencies or not using their time wisely.
Exactly. So, it's like calling 911 to report a paper cut is what it really comes down to here.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah. So hopefully, bear with me. As long as it takes to get out the history, it certainly feels like it's been a while and it's been a long road over this, but the administrator was very happy to provide relief where it makes sense for not only first responders who, by the way, already have a wonderful relationship, generally speaking, I can't speak for everyone, but with their local producers, right? Like they know where, if they're going to have problems, where they're going to be, reasonable minds would think ahead and reach out
right.
and start that local partnership. So having to get up and go file a report in the middle of it probably isn't going to save your house from burning it down. So
that's right. That's right. Hey, we've only got a couple of minutes left here, Tate. I got to ask, under the umbrella of public engagement, is that where farmers and those in the biofuel industry should turn for the transparency that they want regarding the small refinery exemptions? I mean, opening up EPA sounds like it's a priority for Administrator Wheeler.
It is. And, he did couple the E15 final rule with a little bit more of a robust transparency mechanism there, I will say. However, absolutely, the answer to your question is yes. One of my goals for our office, we're always told to set priorities, is to work on the long game of introducing farmers and ranchers. Y'all know how to go get in the door at USDA, regardless of administration, and try to work to get problems solved. We've had 500 farmers and ranchers, we totaled it up the other day, come to EPA, half of them for the first time this fly-in season, and we made it a point to introduce them not only to our political folks, but also our really sharp career staff who are going to be here much longer than we are. So try to change that narrative going forward. So absolutely, that's where they should go. We are an advocate for agriculture across the different programs, not just the air office where the RFS is, but the pesticide office. We've got to be sure farmers have the tools they need in their toolboxes, as well as the Office of Water. And then obviously the emergency reporting fell under our Office of Land and Emergency Management. So we sit from the administrator's office and keep an eye on all of the regulations and policies that we have underway and how they would impact agriculture.
Exactly. Very cool, Tate. I tell you what, it's good to hear that there is an Aggie there in EPA, and I'm sure you're not the only one, but it's good to get to know one, and I'm sure that we'll have a conversation again in the not-too-distant future, all right?
Will you invite us back? I got a few here I can introduce you to.
That is excellent. That is good. I'm going to hold you to that. Appreciate it, Tate. Thank you. That is Tate Bennett, the Associate Administrator for EPA's Office of Public Engagement and Environmental Education. All right. We got a big report coming up in about 15 minutes from USDA.
Yes, we do.
There's lots of different categories in this report. Davis and I'll get you ready for most of them here coming up next.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Central Life Sciences reminds you to get control of flies on your swine operation with Clarifly Larvicide and Starbar products. Clarifly Larvicide prevents the emergence of nuisance flies from animal manure by as much as 96%, and Starbar features a lineup of baits, traps, and sprays that tackle your fly problem. Flies spread disease, impact your neighbors, and interfere with swine weight gain. Visit centralflycontrol.com. That's three words, centralflycontrol.com.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever. But disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erased generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
Soybean growers are going all in on Ingenia herbicide. Now BASF is going all in on Ingenia growers. We're so confident in the performance of this solution, we're now backing it with the Ingenia herbicide weed control guarantee, so you can have true peace of mind. And you can tap into our expanded GrowSmart rewards program and get cash back. Go all in today at IngeniaHerbicide.com. GrowSmart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Sometimes life is wonderful, and sometimes it's not. Cherish the good, but always be prepared for life's challenges. Private healthcare is private health insurance for ages 65 and under with medical, dental, vision, and even prescription coverage. If you're looking for health coverage at the best price and your annual household income is $35,000 or more, give us a call at 800-626-4910. That's 800-626-4910.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast that's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Okay, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, got Davis with me, and we're 10 minutes away from the June supply and demand report.
Say, I want to pull one thing from Pro Farmers Ahead of the Open, ripped from the pages of Pro Farmer.
Cool.
And I just want to bounce this idea off of you. Are you ready?
Yes.
It says, in the soybean section anyway, talking about the upcoming reports, few expect USDA to come close to reality in today's supply and demand report, given planting delays. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think that... And the reason that the guys at Pro Farmer are saying that is because there is so much focus on the supply side of this supply and demand report.
Okay.
Well, these supply side adjustments that we get from May, if there are adjustments from May, are projections. If we don't get a corn yield at 176 bushels per acre, and I don't think there's anybody that really expects this corn crop is going to go 176 bushels per acre for a national average yield, not with the troubles that we've had. And if it's not 49.5 bushels per acre for a national average yield on soybeans, it's the World Board making some assumptions on what the yields are going to be on a national basis, and that those assumptions will be driven by yield models. Those assumptions will be driven by weather reports, by planting progress, by crop conditions. And we don't even have a crop condition report on soybeans yet. So the big question is always, are they going to do anything with acres? Are they going to do anything with yields in the June supply and demand report when NAS, who is responsible for the supply side estimates, doesn't deliver any estimate of corn or soybean production until we get to the August reports.
Okay.
Okay, so June and July are driven by World Board. These are very well informed, very smart analysts that are putting their best effort forward to try to figure out what the corn and soybean yields are going to be, whether there should be any adjustments from trend line, and whether there should be any adjustments from trend line on yields, and whether there should be any adjustments to acres from the prospective plantings report that we got at the end of March.
A quick stupid question: where does the World Board reside? Where are they sitting with me? Is it at USDA?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, at USDA. Yeah, they work under Chief Economist Robert Johansson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like a panel in, say, Brussels or something.
No.
Looking and going, well, the American farmer is the best in the world. They can grow anything, anytime. No problem.
No.
Okay. Okay.
So, because it is a projection, the tendency is to go slow on this, to stay quote-unquote conservative. So what are we expecting? In the supply and demand report, on the supply side, the average trade guess on yields, and this is according to Reuters, 172.4 bushels per acre, down from the trend line yield of 176 bushels per acre. So they are expecting that cut. Now the crop is expected at 14.251 billion bushels. That would be down from 15.03 billion bushels. And by the way, the highest crop estimate that we've got from the market is 14.859 billion bushels. So nobody expects it to get up to the level that was projected back in May. So ran a little math backwards on this.
Okay.
The 14.251 at 172.4 bushels per acre would be harvested acres of 82.7 million. Now, if you take the typical abandonment out of that, it would suggest plantings of 89.3 million, which would be down 3.5 million from the May supply and demand report.
Okay.
Just to hustle through some of the other ones here. Yeah. Back in May, USDA put the national average bean yield at trend line of 49.5 bushels per acre. Trade is expecting 49 bushels per acre. Crop of 4.123 versus a May projection of 4.15 billion bushels. On carryover, the old crop, 2018-19 corn carryover, is expected at 2.123 billion bushels. That would be up from last month at 2.095. On the new crop, the 2019-20, 1.917 billion bushels. That compares to 2.485 billion bushels that was expected last month. Mm-hmm. So off more than 500 million bushels here. I mean, it's a big cut that we're talking about in expected new crop corn carryover. Bean carryover, not so much. We're expecting the bean carryover for old crop beans at just over 1 billion bushels. Last month, it was 995 million for the 2019-20 marketing year. The average trade guess is 983 million bushels. Last month, it was 970 million bushels. One thing that is kind of flying under the radar screen right now is we also get an update to the wheat crop estimates.
Yeah.
For all wheat, the average estimate is 1.883 billion bushels. That's down 14 million bushels from last month. Most of that is coming out of the HRW crop, according to traders, because they've got an average trade guess of 765 million bushels, down 15 million bushels from the estimate last month. SRW is expected at 261 million bushels. It was 265 last month. And the white winter wheat crop is unchanged, 224 million bushels from May. Also got to watch the soybean production estimates out of Brazil, out of Argentina. You got to watch the corn estimates there. And, of course, the global numbers are going to have a big impact, too. We're going to have the details of all that this afternoon.
Whew.
Yeah.
That's a lot to fit in.
You ready?
Do I have time to fill my coffee before the reports come out? Looks like I might.
You know, you're going to have to hustle. You're going to have to hustle to get it done.
Well, that's just not my bag.
Hey, all right. Thanks for listening this morning. Thanks to Annalisa Locke. Thanks to Representative Spanberger and to Tate Bennett for joining us today. Come back this afternoon. Davis and I got the numbers. Yep. Tomorrow morning, Jeff Cooper and a farmer forum, Bob from Missouri and Chad from Illinois.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket you spot. Miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good home. Brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by the IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, leveraging unique data, analytics, and predictive insights to help growers make more informed, confident decisions.